Chapter 6, Rest by the Way. A long, restful day followed, the happiest day that the poor children had known for weeks. It was Sunday, and the whole population assembled to worship after the Huguenot fashion in the parish church. As they walked back to the minister's house afterwards, Henry took occasion to ask how it was that not a single Roman Catholic seemed to belong to the village. This parish is one of many which have professed the Reformed religion for two or three generations, replied the minister, and the Roman Catholics have gradually died out. We have still one among us, however, and he pointed to the chimneys of a house which stood by itself a little within the forest. An old man lives there alone with two servants, also Roman Catholics, and he is very bitter against the Reformed religion. I suppose we have to thank him for our pleasant surprise the other night. It seems a dreadful thing that such things should be done for religion, said Marie timidly. If all of you agree, for instance, in this one village to belong to the Reformed religion, why must you not do so? That one man could go somewhere else. Surely it seems so unjust. It is unjust, God knows, answered the minister earnestly. But we are patient for God's sake. We wait his time. I am so tired, Marie, put in little Louis, coming to his sister's side and taking her hand. I am so glad today is Sunday, and we have not to walk a long way. He is very young for such a journey as you propose, said the minister, stooping to take the child into his powerful arms. Do you think he can possibly manage it, my dear? Monsieur Lefleur and his sister knew all about their young guest now, and were full of compassion for the fate which, alas, was shared by hundreds in those troublous times. I cannot tell, answered Marie, with the look of womanly care which was often on her young face now. I see nothing else to be done. I do not suppose that any letter would reach Father Gabriel safely now, and even if it did, he could do nothing for us. We can only go on and trust in God, Henry says, and I think he must be right. Monsieur Lefleur did not say any more now, but in the afternoon, when they had all gone for a little walk into the forest, and Cecile had gone on in front with the two younger boys, he proposed to sit down and wait for their return. They had scarcely seated themselves, when he said abruptly to Henry, Your sister tells me that you think there is no choice for you but to go toward Bordeaux in the same fashion that you have begun. I know of no other, said Henry, rather surprised. We cannot afford to go in any other way. And I cannot afford to send you, said the minister sadly, but I do not think either your sister or Louis is fit for such a journey. Oh, indeed, monsieur, exclaimed Marie. I am much stronger than I look, and I have always been used to long walks. You should not do it if I could help you, if I could help it, said Henry, but as I said before, I do not see what else is left for us to do. What do you think of my plan, asked the minister very kindly, that you should leave your sister and Louis with us? We would do our very best for them, and that you and Guillemin should make your way to Amsterdam and write for them when you have found your friends. Henry turned his face downwards on the ground and answered not a word. Marie had sprung to her feet as the minister spoke, and scarcely waited for the end of his speech to burst out with her eager protest. Oh, monsieur, no, no, 1,000 times no. We might as well die at once as to be separated from one another. Henry, speak. Tell him that you and I, at any rate, will never part. It might be our duty, you know, Marie, answered Henry in a smothered voice. Oh, Henry, she cried piteously, I cannot bear it. First Mama, then Papa, then Arella, all gone, and now you. You are all I have left. I cannot part from you. I will leave you for a little while to think it over, said the minister, getting up. You will perhaps be better able to decide by yourselves. He laid his hand upon Marie's head for an instant in passing, and heard her say as he passed out of sight, "O Henry, speak to me. Indeed, I will try to do right. I will bear it if it be God's will." He had not gone far before he came upon his sister, also sitting down, with Lewis leaning against her, and Gloom lying in his favorite position on the grass. "They are talking it over between them," he said, in answer to a look from his sister, and then he sat down beside them, and they talked together with long pauses of delicious idleness for some time. At length Cecile declared that it was time to go back to tea, and they rose obediently to join the others. Monsieur Lafleur went on a little in advance, and soon came upon Henry and Marie. They were sitting silently together, but Henry rose at his approach and spoke hurriedly. "We have thought it well over, monsieur, and thought we shall ever be grateful to you for all your kindness. We think, on the whole, that we may still try to go on in the same way. Papa would have wished it, if possible," he continued nervously, "and perhaps, monsieur, there are really some reasons why it might not be a good plan. In these times you might soon be in trouble yourself, pardon me if I am wrong to say so, and there might even be a great chance of our never finding each other again. At present we can pretty well manage to go on unnoticed, and though, of course, we are tired, we are none of us really the worse for more than a week of such traveling." "Perhaps you are right," said the minister, who had listened to Henry's speech in perfect silence. "My life is not my own, and even my sister might not always be able to remain here. It is decided, then, my dear children, may God keep you." "And oh, monsieur," exclaimed Marie breathlessly, venturing to take his hand as she looked up pleadingly into his face, "you will know how we long to thank you, how grateful we really are, and how we shall ask God every night to bless you." The minister bent down and kissed the little hand that rested so confidingly in his. "Thank you, my dear," he said. "I also will not forget you." No one spoke of the plan again during the walk, but Cecile, when she afterwards heard from her brother of its non-success, was very much disappointed, and could scarcely be brought to see that the children might, after all, be in the right. She longed especially to keep little Louis, but did not say anything more to Marie, as her brother seemed not to wish it. Indeed, he had good reason to know that his life was now no longer to be counted upon, and little as he thought the children fit for so long a journey, he was inclined to think that such a risk was perhaps the least of the two. Henry had written to Father Gabriel to tell him of their safety, and he had undertaken to forward the letter, but there was little chance of it ever reaching him. At least, they did all they could to make the children's journey easier. A peasant belonging to the village willingly undertook to drive them in his cart as far as the next town, about 11 miles distant, and to direct them from there to a house where they might rest in safety for the night. Cecile slipped the greater part of her scanty store of money into Louis's pocket, with directions to give the packet to Marie the last thing at night. It was not much past 8 o'clock in the morning when the rough, springless conveyance came to the door, and Cecile and her brother came out to see the children start. It was a sad parting, for they seemed to have become close friends in this little while, and there were tears in the eyes of more than one as they said goodbye. However, none but cheerful words were spoken. They drove quickly away, and looking back once more at the corner, they saw Cecile and her brother still standing in the sunlight with hopeful, smiling faces and waving a last greeting as the cart turned around the corner.